No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People the Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the conversation by calling in at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Or Skype us at BBS Radio 1. Today, we're going to wing it. We don't have a guest. So please call in and let us hear from you so we can keep the conversation going. I was going to introduce my co-host, Kathleen Gomez. Are you there, Kathleen? We're having a few technical problems getting through to Kathleen. So maybe we should start the show without her, and hopefully we'll get her hooked up in the next few minutes, and she'll be on the show. We're going to start this evening by talking about what's going on in the District of Columbia, and there's a lot going on in the District of Columbia. If you listen to the show regularly, you know that last week, the President of the United States, President Obama, said that he's for D.C. statehood. He gave the response, I'm for it. I hear Kathleen. I hear you in the background, Kathleen.
Okay.
President Obama said, well, first let's welcome Kathleen. How are you? Everything going all right? We've got you on the phone now.
On the phone. I had my assistant, my 14-year-old assistant, who's very good with technology, assist me.
All right. Then I think she was drinking, folks. I don't know what she went, but thank God. Thank you, Mateo, for getting your old untechnically savvy mom on the air. I was just about to say, Kathleen, that since President Obama said about D.C. statehood, I'm for it, about 10 days ago, we have gotten 24 new co-sponsors for the D.C. statehood bill. Yeah, it's amazing, folks, in the House of Representatives. We now have 91 in the House of Representatives, and that's an increase of 35% in 10 days. Now, this bill has been out there for almost 2 years, and we had 63 co-sponsors. We now have 91. That's an increase of more than 35% in 10 days. So thanks, Mr. President. Thank you, for standing up for the people of the District of Columbia. And, you know, some people inside D.C. criticize the president for not backing up his statements with some sort of policy initiative. You know, they've been saying to me, well, what's he going to do? He says he's for it, but what's he going to do? Well, he's already using his bully pulpit to stand up for it and for D.C. statehood. And that alone, look at the results that have come out of it. 35% increase in 10 days. So thank you, Mr. President, and thank you to the following members. You know, we cannot let people stand up for the people of the District of Columbia without thanking them. So here it goes. I want to thank Representative Johnson of the 30th Congressional District of Texas, Representative Delaney from Maryland 6, Representative Sheila Jackson Lee, who has always supported the people of the District of Columbia, from Texas's 18th, Representative Rosa DeLauro, who I actually talked to when I went up to the Hill to lobby a few weeks ago. I ran into her and we had a brief discussion, and I thanked her for standing up for us. And look, she turned right around and did exactly that. She's from Connecticut's 3rd District, Representative Alan Grayson from Florida's 9th, Representative Joe Kennedy from Massachusetts' 4th, Representative Larson from Connecticut's 1st District, Representative Roybal Allard from California's 40th, Representative Pallone from New Jersey's 6th, my home state of New Jersey, Representative Spire, California's 14th, Representative Henry Waxman, also a longtime supporter of the District of Columbia from California's 33rd, Representative Castro from Texas 20th, Peter DeFazio of Oregon's 4th, Representative Ishu of California's 18th, another New Jersey native, Representative Rush Holt from New Jersey's 12th. I actually was a consultant to Rush Holt at one point, and you may not know this, but Rush Holt was a five-time Jeopardy winner. There's a little trivia for you. I think he's the only one that's ever a member of Congress that's ever won five times on Jeopardy. Representative Nita Lowy.
Your old friend.
Yes, whose daughter Jacqueline and I were dear, dear friends, are still good friends. She's from New York's 17th. Representative Scott from Georgia's 13th. Representative Crowley, another New Yorker from the 14th. Representative Engel, another New Yorker from the 16th. Representative Frankel from Florida's 22nd. Representative Horsford from Nevada's 4th. Representative Carolyn McCarthy, another New Yorker from the 4th. Representative Pascrell, another New Jersey, Garden State, 9th, and Representative John Tierney of Massachusetts, 6th. Thank you, thank you, thank you for standing up for the people of District Columbia. We're well on our way to getting these bills through Congress. And let me ask you the $64,000 question, Kathleen. What do you think all these people have in common?
They all have tea in the morning.
Yeah, they all have tea in the morning. And they all vote.
Democrats.
All Democrats. And
all,
you know,
Democrats.
So come on. Let's get a Republican out there that's willing to stand up for the principles on which America was founded, huh? You know?
Let me say this right here. Okay. You know, this whole thing, I think this bill is kind of also picturesque and reflective of what's going on in the Hill, where it's so bipartisan that I don't think a Republican would dare do anything that they're not told to do because they can't think on their own. And I'm saying this because I am just so disgusted with the Republicans right now and the Democrats. The Democrats haven't managed to do anything either. They haven't managed to, pass anything in the House, and they definitely didn't get anything through the Senate. But this whole thing that the Republicans did for the past 2 days in impeaching the president, which is ridiculous, and then passing these two bills they know are going to go nowhere, but to make a statement as if they were doing something. I'm getting really so disgusted with Republicans that they're incapable and so afraid that they can't think for themselves, because there's no reason why you can't have one Republican on here. So now you have a total of how many, 91?
91 in the House and 16 in the Senate.
So to get all the Democrats, that would be what, 183 approximately, right?
I'm sorry, all the Democrats, yeah, that's approximately right, yeah.
Like that. It is mind-blowing. And my other thing about this is let me ask you a question. Now that Obama came out at a D.C. event and was asked this question by a student, right? Wasn't it a student who asked him?
Yeah. He was at a school, and a student asked him, yes.
And that's amazing that student, you know, realizes the statehood is so important. When you look at your D.C. City Council, I don't see, was there any comment? Did any of them do anything to say that this was great that the president had done, or was it just from your office, you know, shadow senator's office? And I don't know, I'm sure that the representative, Eleanor Norton Holmes.
Yes.
Did she say something?
Yes. Eleanor Holmes Norton said something, and I said something. Our office said something. I don't remember any comments from the city council. I think the mayor made a comment on it, but I don't think anybody on the city council made a comment on it. Now, I could be wrong about that. They might have tweeted something out or something, but the Washington Post ran an article on it, and I was quoted, and Eleanor Holmes Norton was quoted, and some other people were quoted, but no city councilman.
Okay, I want to give the number out for anybody in D.C. to call in, and their number is 888-627-6008, or Skype us at BBS Radio 1 if you don't want to go on the air. And I want to know if this bothers anybody who may be in the D.C., in D.C. actually listening to our show, which I know we have a good fan base there. Does this just not kind of seem totally out of sync that your city council doesn't seem to be on board with statehood? I don't get it. First of all, we know they don't fund you or Senator Strauss's or the other representative's office. You guys are volunteers. Right. You run like everybody else. You have campaign expenses just like everybody else, yet they don't fund you. So even when you win, you're not getting any money.
Right.
Right? Okay.
Right.
Now,
right.
Here's the city council. These guys make good money, right? I mean, I'd say they'd make over about 125, right? You know, right. Minimum, what do you
right.
say?
I think they start somewhere between 125 and 130, and it's a part-time job. You can do other stuff. A lot of them are college professors and consultants, and they do other stuff. They also get off the whole month of August. They're not around.
Aren't they also off when Congress is off?
No, not necessarily, but they get, you know, believe me, you and I, the Europeans would envy their vacation schedule. They get a lot of time off.
Okay, so this is my point. They don't fund it. Here is the President of the United States coming out and saying, this is something that should be done. It's the right thing to do. They don't fund your office. How do you go to lobby? I'd like anyone to tell me how anyone gives people, thinks a cause is worthwhile if you don't fund it. You know, to me, right there, you have to fund something. You have to have the money to pay for a campaign, to get people involved, to educate, to get out there on the airways, to make sure people know what they're doing. Now, you know, it's weird because in a small town where I was in Douglas, where you had a newspaper that was published one day a week, very little media, there is really no media market there. That people don't know about this and aren't going crazy, because the city council should be making sure that this is something that gets funded, and now with this momentum that you guys push for statehood. And it seems to me that they're not behind the issue. And I think people in D.C. should call them out on it. I really do. I just don't see them doing what they need to do to make sure that this effort goes further than just, you know, you guys who volunteer and go up there on the Hill when you got your own, you have your expenses. I like to see them work for free.
Right.
I really like to see them work for free.
Somebody made that point at a forum recently with one of the mayoral candidates that she said that she would, you know, before she would approve funding, if she was the mayor, she would want to see what we're doing for a couple of years. And somebody stood up and said, okay, well, then maybe we should pass a resolution that if you get elected, you shouldn't get paid for the first 2 years until we see what you're going to do. I mean, it is absolutely crazy. And I'd like to point out that we do get a little funding, and it comes from the taxpayers on a checkoff, but they even ended that last year. So and that's how we pay for shadow politics. We pay for the show out of the little bit of funding that the people of the District of Columbia give us. And that's why we talk so much about statehood and about the issues in the District of Columbia, because we're really supported by the voters, by the taxpayers of the District of Columbia. But we don't get a lot of money doing that. We only get a few thousand dollars a year, and we use the money. I've started a nationwide nonprofit. We started this radio show, you and I. We've done other things. And by the way, Kathleen's a volunteer. I mean, she lives in Arizona, but she does this every week with me out of the kindness of her heart, you know. And if she didn't, you people would all be bored to death and falling asleep because you'd be listening to me drone on and on. So everybody involved in this movement is pretty much a volunteer, and it's crazy. We lose a lot of money every year, $2 billion a year. We don't have the rights that America was founded on, and it's just crazy. And they always interfere with what's going on in the District of Columbia. Recently, we decriminalized marijuana, and we've got people on the Hill trying to change that law. We have people messing with our gun laws. We actually had a case in federal court last week, and although this isn't Congress, this is the federal court that's brought this. A couple of Washingtonians brought this case. I can't help but believe it's encouraged by the people in Congress that are always attacking our gun laws. But Judge Frederick Scullin ruled that our ban on carrying handguns in public in the District of Columbia was unconstitutional, and he passed a ruling that said police could not enforce DC gun laws. If they caught people out on the street with guns, they couldn't arrest them. It's crazy. The good news is that our attorney general was able to go in and get a 90-day stay. So now we have 90 days to produce a new law that will satisfy the court and will keep them from doing this onerous thing to our police department. Our police chief, Kathy Lanier, has talked out against it. And, of course, it's a matter of great public safety here in the District of Columbia, where we have the president and all these politicians and diplomats. It's just crazy. But, again, the city council is out on recess for most of the month of August. So when they get back, they'll have very short time to deal with this issue, and it'll have to be the first thing, you know, on the front burner.
Okay, but see, I don't get this whole thing, because that means that that guy who had you can't carry rifles, or can you carry any kind of guns? Is it open to any kind of gun, or specific to just a pistol that you can carry in D.C.?
Well, in the District of Columbia, you were not allowed to have a carry permit, so it banned the public carrying of any gun. You couldn't carry a shotgun in public. You couldn't carry a handgun. You could have no handguns in public. We didn't issue carry permits. Arizona has a carry permit law. Many states have a carry permit law. So you have to get a permit. And you know what? I guess I'm not so against the idea of allowing people to carry if they have a permit, if the gun's registered, if it's insured, you know, and if they show some proficiency with it. I don't understand why it should be any different than a car. You know, a car is potentially dangerous, so you have to have it insured, you have to show that you can drive it, and it has to be registered. And I don't understand why, with the fact that guns are designed for one purpose and one purpose only, that we can't enforce the same kind of laws with guns. If you're out there listening and you're a member of the NRA and you don't agree with me, call in, because Kathleen and I have been talking about this for more than a year, and we've yet to get a call. We've had one gun owner call in a year. So if you're out there and you think we're wrong, call in. Go ahead, Kathleen.
I just wondered then, you know, here you've got the congressional police, you've got park police, and you got all these police enforcement zones, and they have to work together. But, you know, you're not going to be able to carry a gun on the Hill. They're not going to let you, even if you have a permit, you're going to walk around with a pistol when you go into the – it just doesn't make any sense. And I guess you wonder if these people, these lawmakers, are thinking the whole thing through. I mean, I hope if this goes through and there's a problem, maybe it should be the gunman who's going crazy. I hope they enter their office. I mean, it's a terrible thing to say, but it makes no absolute sense.
Well, you know what? It's probably different on the Hill because it's federal jurisdiction, you know, so you probably can't, you know, the law that's passed in the District of Columbia is not going to affect what happens on the Hill, because the Capitol Police, and a lot of people make the mistake, they think that the Capitol Police are guards of the Capitol, and that's one of their functions, but actually they have jurisdiction for a 6-block area around the Capitol, and that's federal property, and you can't carry, I'm sure you still won't be able to carry a gun there. You probably won't be able to carry a gun on the Mall or because that's the jurisdiction of the federal park police, and you won't be able to carry a gun on the mall or you know, around the monuments or anything except for D.C. You know, and this is another subject that you brought up that I think we should talk about a little bit, and that's the fact that the District of Columbia and the federal enclave are two separate things. They're really separate laws. They have, you know, the only thing is that the federal government has total control over the District of Columbia.
I just, you know, I can imagine some guy is carrying a gun, you know, he comes to DC, he's angry, whether it's a taxes or whatever it may be. And I'm sure he's going to, once he gets to the mall, say, oh my gosh, you know, I need to go back to my hotel or go back to where I visited my friends and put my gun away because, oh yeah, this is federal land and I know I shouldn't be carrying a gun.
Well, Lafayette Park across the street from the White House is federal land. But a half a block in each direction and you're back in the District of Columbia. So you could stand across the street from the White House with a gun if the ruling of the court goes through. And there was actually a law passed a few years ago that you could carry semi-automatic weapons in federal parks if you had a permit. And that means you could carry a semi-automatic weapon across the street from the White House. And this is just crazy. I mean, it not only jeopardizes the life of the president and the first family, but how about all those Secret Service agents uniform Secret Service guards that guard the White House and the surrounding area, puts them at risk. You know, we have park police in Lafayette Park and other places, puts them at risk. I mean, it seems to me it's just crazy. I don't think anybody minds or has a problem with the Second Amendment. And if you want to protect yourself, but it just gets crazy that you're allowed to do this stuff in public. That's why we have a police department. And then, as you know, Kathleen, we have cops everywhere in the district.
Everywhere.
You know, police, Park Service, Federal Park Service. We have the same kind of Border Patrol agents that you have in Arizona. We have the Capitol Police. We have the FBI. We have the Secret Service. I mean, there may be more people carrying guns now in the District of Columbia than in most places. But they're law enforcement officers. They're not citizens. So if you don't feel safe in downtown Washington with all those cops, I don't know how a gun's going to make you feel any safer.
Well, I think what's just obvious is these guys don't probably ever do much in D.C. other than, you know, the corridors of power, you would say, like maybe Pennsylvania Avenue or where maybe they live, which might be in the Northwest, or maybe they live in Virginia, who knows. But I'm sure they don't go to the rest of the city. You know, they don't go to Ward 8 or Ward 5 or down to Anacostia or stuff like that. And it just amazes me, and this is a problem with lawmakers, is that they pass law not understanding what the end result of that law is going to do or what it's actually, how it's going to impact people. They do it because, like that guy said, because they can. And then they walk away from it and they just figure that, you know, hey, that's just that's just the way you do it. You know, you don't follow it through. You don't follow it to the end. So that's really kind of a really sad, sad state of affairs.
Well, that's true. And you know what Kathleen's referring to as the guy who said, I'm doing it because I can. There was a guy named Thomas Massey, from a Republican, of course, from Kentucky, who said he's trying to protect the people of the District of Columbia's God-given right to bear arms. Like, I mean, I don't know who his God is, but I pretty much read the Bible from cover to cover, and I don't see anywhere where it says that, you know, you should arm yourself against your neighbors. But anyway, he thinks you have a God-given right to own a gun. And that's what they said when they said, well, the law in Maryland doesn't allow this. And so why, he's from, he's, I'm sorry, the your laws in Kentucky don't allow the kind of thing you're talking about. Why are you doing it in Washington? He said, because I can. And that's it. They grandstand here. They like the publicity. They want to, they want to get their name in the newspaper and look tough for their constituents at home. And they can do that by attacking the people of the District of Columbia. And I think, you know, when you talk about funding from the city council, one of the things that I'd like to do is I'd like to go into some of these guys' home districts and put up billboards or do radio ads or something saying, look, these people are trying to run the District of Columbia instead of running your city. There was or your state. There was a guy, there was an organization here in town, DC Vote, and they all showed up at a congressman's office from Maryland who wanted to mess with the laws in the District of Columbia, and they all brought their constituents' complaints to him. They said, look, if you want to represent the people of the District of Columbia, okay, these are what our problems are. Take care of them. But, you know, they want to bother with us, but they don't want to take the responsibility, as you just pointed out. They don't want to follow it through. They don't care what the ramifications are because it's not their state. It's not right. Their city.
Right. And it's just like, I think with the two bills that they did pass out of the House, it was just a grandstanding thing just to show, oh, well, we did something. But you know what? I think everyone can understand that that's just totally wrong. I mean, I don't know. I get very frustrated with this because I just don't understand how, as politicians, they've become more of liars, more of people who don't do anything. Everyone's hiding behind so-called the party line and so afraid. And I'm just amazed. You know, I look at Arizona, has more independents registered than Republicans or Democrats. Yet here in this red state, you know, all they do is talk about running against Obama and stopping Obama, but they have done nothing. And I just don't understand why in the Republican view of things that what you do is sit there and talk about Obama instead of what you're going to do as a party or you're going to do as a candidate to make the place better, whether you're running for governor or city council. And it's just amazing to me that the Republicans, I mean, they have a good, great chance of really messing up their party if they continue to do this, because I don't think the American people are buying it anymore.
Well, you know, I mean, I hear that all the time as I travel around Washington and in different venues, or as I go outside of Washington and travel around in different states talking about the issues that are important to the people of District Columbia. I hear this all the time from people. We're sick of the politicians. We're sick of not getting anything done. You know, in the Washington Post today, they wrote that this is the worst Congress in the history of the United States in terms of getting things done. There was a Congress in the 40s that Harry Truman called the do-nothing Congress because they weren't getting anything passed. And this Congress, they said today in the Post, that this Congress is worse than the do-nothing Congress. I don't know what's lower than doing nothing, but whatever it is, these guys have figured out a way to do it. And you know what? It is, as you said before, a partisan thing. The Republicans have caused gridlock, but the Democrats are to blame too. You know, it takes two people to have a bad marriage, and that's what we've got going on in Capitol Hill right now. We have a bad marriage. So as somebody that's been a lifelong Democrat, it's really hard for me to see both parties going through this, and we need to do something to get around the gridlock.
And that's the next bottom line is that people have got to get involved, especially coming up. You know, you need to take the time to look up your guy who's running for city council, the one who's running for your county supervisor, for sheriff, for judge. You have to make the effort and the time to find out what these people are about and go vote. And, you know, if you don't do it and you sit there, oh, well, it's politics the same. Who cares? I don't like any of them. You are – the blame. Then I have to put the blame on the people who don't vote or the people who don't go and get themselves educated and just vote along a party line. You can't vote along party lines. You have to vote for the person. And if they tend to be mostly Democrat, great. One term, and the next term, it might be the Republicans. But this whole thing of where, you know, you have to, you know, I don't understand this conservative foundation or group that's in the Republican Party that everyone is so afraid of to even go out and voice their opinion. And I guess these are the people that just have the money. They must be the 1% who said, you're going to do it our way, and if you don't, we won't fund you. And that's why they have to go so hard to the party line. I mean, that's the only thing that makes sense to me, because they've got to see that people are just disgusted with them. And it's not like, I don't know the rally that they're getting from most of the American public. It may get the rally from the very conservative hard right. But gosh, I mean, and I think that goes to show you, when you have money and power, and when the Justice Department, Judicial Department, decided to have that law knocked down where there's only so much that a lobbyist or a company can give for its political campaign. Right. Now they can spend whatever they want, like the Koch brothers, whatever. They have $4 billion. They're welcome to spend it on political ads and you know, funding, putting their money in things that are going to get people elected that they want. So that's why it's even more important for the public to get involved in who they're electing.
Well, you know, it's funny, because in the district, we certainly have this problem. We had a guy named Jeffrey Thompson who had a $350 million contract. He gave money to everybody. He gave money legally and illegally. He gave money to – there was only one person out of 13 on the city council. There was only one council member who hadn't taken money from him. Now, most of those contributions were legal contributions, but some of them, we find out, were not legal contributions. He gave $100,000 to a guy who was running for mayor and dropped out of the race. He gave him $100,000 to drop out of the race so the other candidate would not have the competition. And later, this young
can't you tell him, say his name? Can't you say his name?
Yeah, it's Michael Brown. It's the other
exactly.
Michael Brown.
Thank
and
you.
He's on his way to jail.
He's on
his way to jail. And then he put $650,000 illegally into the mayoral campaign of our current mayor. And the current mayor actually has lost in the primary because of this, because all this came out. And actually the current mayor, Vince Gray, hasn't been charged with anything. So we're not even sure that the mayor was you know, culpable in any way. He hasn't been charged. But this guy, Jeffrey Thompson, just gave money to everybody. He gave it to Hillary Clinton. He gave it to people at the national level. You know, and we got to do something to get the money out of politics. It's just crazy to think that you're going to take thousands and thousands of dollars from people and you're not going to answer the phone when they call. Yes, you are going to answer the phone. Now, that doesn't mean that you're doing anything illegal, but you know what? They shouldn't have that kind of influence. They just shouldn't have that kind of influence. And we need to get the money out. Kathleen and I both worked in finance for the Democratic Party. We both spent a lot of time working on FEC reports, right? Federal contribution reports, to make sure that we were going by the guidelines. And we saw the money come in. And it really does corrupt the system. And we need to figure out a way to just get it out. And get people like the Koch brothers. And, you know, there's people on the Democratic side, too.
Yes.
I don't want to act like, you know, only conservatives are villains here. The Democrats take a lot of money from unions and other groups as well. And you know what? If you're taking $50 from the union membership, you know, individual union members are sending you money, that's one thing. Or if you're taking, you know, $100 on the from conservatives on the Republican side of things, that's another thing. But when big corporations are involved, and guys like the Koch brothers
and Murdoch and stuff like
that, and all these big PACs, that's, you know, a recipe for disaster.
In Coros, isn't it? Or Stor? What's his name? George.
Oh yeah, yeah. I can't.
Coros or something like that. He's also has, you know, he doesn't have that kind of money the Koch brothers do, but it's a sizable amount that he has, and he does it for the Democrats. So, you know, and that's a whole other thing, but there's very simple ways in which to do it. But, you know, it's like anything. If, you know, the media is used to getting chunks of money to do, you know, marketing and ads and TV and newspaper stuff. So, you know, it's a huge industry that has people feeding off of it, too.
Well, we're going to take a quick break here so that Kathleen can refill her beer mug and I can catch my breath. And so here's one from Sly and the Family Stone, and it goes out to President Obama and the 24 members of the House that stood up for the good citizens of the nation's capital this week. We'll be back in a few minutes. And we're back. Thanks, Sly.
And it's margaritas, not beer.
Oh, margaritas. I'm sorry. I forgot you'd moved on to the hard stuff.
It's called nopalitos, margaritas, with a little bit of salt, a little bit of tequila, and, you know, some ice.
Yeah, I have a feeling that there's more tequila than there is salt in your margarita. That would be a great slogan for you, Kathleen. More tequila than salt.
There you go.
She's a nice person. She's not salty. unless you get on her wrong side.
That's right.
So what else do you want to talk about today?
Right. Anything that really annoyed me is this whole thing of suing the president. I mean, this is what I don't get. Okay, they don't do anything. And they're mad at him because he did things because they wouldn't do anything in this past, you know, session that they had. And so they impeach him for having to address the issue and do something. And at the same time, they say we're going on recess. The president will have to get involved in the border security issue and do something. Well, if he does something, it'll be through executive order. So how does... Okay, you know, I'm thinking like, all right, am I that much smarter? Are we all that much smarter than they are? And then if they are, why are we so stupid to elect people who are stupider than us? I mean, that's common sense. So the taxpayers' money that has been used to do this whole thing, to pay for the lawyers, to draw up the bill, to introduce in the House, and all the time they spent on it, yet they didn't address the issues that we're talking about that we need. You know, I mean, I don't know. I just so offended by these guys in that they think I'm so stupid. And I think that's what they think of the, and I say this as the public, you know, I mean, really, how stupid do you think we are?
Well, you know, that's it, right? It's a classic to have a politician that speaks out of both sides of his mouth at the same time. You know, that's an old political saying, talking out of both sides of your mouth. And that's what these guys are doing. And it's one of the first things you learn. I remember my first elected office was as an ANC commissioner. And an ANC commissioner is a neighborhood commissioner that's elected and represents the neighborhood on a small commission, which is supposed to help bring problems forth for city government to deal with. And the first thing I realized is that a stop sign in front of my house is a bad thing, but a stop sign in front of your house is an okay thing. You know, right. And that works for politicians and citizens alike. Like the guy in Maryland who wanted to change the law in D.C. because he could and doesn't try to change it in Maryland. You know, there is no logic to this. And I think they do think we're stupid. And it's incredible because I don't think the voters have ever been stupid. And the thing about America is that we are a population of bright people who, many of whom, want to do the right thing. And I think this is going to turn around and bite these guys. I want to see what happens in the next election. We've just seen a Tea Party guy win in Virginia and do an amazing thing to Eric Cantor. Eric Cantor was an incumbent and majority leader, and no incumbent majority leader has ever lost before, but he lost in the primary to a Tea Party guy. So that's a little scary. The Tea Party's still out there and still strong in some places, but I want to see what happens in the fall elections. I think they're going to take a lot of hits because I think you're right. I think people aren't stupid and they're tired of this nonsense.
You know, and then let's talk about this immigration bill, because, you know, this whole thing of border security, which I have to laugh with these guys. You know, none of these guys, they fly in to the border, because I've seen them when they do it into Douglas, and they get Border Patrol, meets them every, you know, the whole entourage meets them, drives them in a car, they stay in the car, they go up and down along the fence, they get out, they look at the port of entry, and everyone says a few things, they get in the car and they drive off, and then they say, oh, I went down there. You need to, like, spend some time or talk to the people who live there on what's going on. You know, this bill that was finally passed, and I guess there was the first one, which has everyone talking that there was a meltdown because the far right did not feel, or the Tea Party, that it was strong enough or that it was limiting people enough as far as being able to come in the United States. And I say that because, look, I, in this show, have talked many times that I believe we have to have an immigration policy. That's why everyone's coming here, is because we really, no one understands what the law is, other than, hey, a lot of people get in free and they get to get to have their benefits and they get taken care of. And that's known. I mean, there was this one article that I read where a young child of 9 said, I'm going to the United States because I hear they take care of kids. Now, my heart goes out to that child, but that's what our immigration policy is. Get here and you'll probably end up staying and getting amnesty. Now, I growing up on the border, I've seen people who've done it. We've had discussions about this. So, you know, I'm not somebody that believes in open borders. And I've seen too many people take advantage. They have their babies on this side. We end up taking care of them as far as benefits, insurance, schooling, food stamps, everything else for 18 years. And they live on the other side. They live in Mexico. And especially in the last years, it has gotten to the point where it's actually seen as a real, you know what? I got, you know, it's kind of like I got one on the United States. They're paying for my bills. And I get really angry when I know so many people who live and work in Douglas and get their benefits and yet go across the line where it's, you know, heck, a lot cheaper to live. So I'm not somebody that's for open borders, but at the same time, if you don't have any kind of immigration policy, people will keep on coming here. You know, if you go to Germany, you know Germany is going to be rough. You can't just go in there without papers. You're going to end up in jail. And you need something like this. Now, they passed this bill that I guess I was trying to find out more about it, but it's $694 million basically to fund and pay back some of the states for – I didn't see it mentioned in Arizona. Texas gets about $34 million to reimburse the state for all of taking care of these kids. I hope Arizona got some because we had a huge amount that we had to take care of. And it does more like it. It talks about limiting in I think kids before 2007, if they were born over here, I don't know if it's the DREAM Act they're responding to, but they would no longer be able, of kids who were here before 2007, it would be much harder for them to stay. They've gotten kind of a two-year visa to stay in the United States, but after that, then they can be deported. And so it's very, very tough language that's going to be impossible to really – it's not going to happen in reality. It's just too unworkable. And yet they do this. There's nothing in companion in the Senate. So it's yet again, we don't have an immigration policy. We don't have anything about, you know, these agencies are supposedly running out of money in mid-August, and this is supposed to help them get through until Congress gets back, where, of course, they won't do anything because they're going to be in the election year. So you can forget about anything happening before November the 4th. So that puts us what? Then it's Christmas, then Thanksgiving and Christmas. We probably won't see anything until next year.
Well, you know, this is the sad thing, the thing you talk about having no policy, because conservatives who are upset about having what they consider open borders and having people come over and take advantage of all the social services over here, they encourage it by not having a policy, by standing so firmly against making any progress, they encourage this. You know, it's funny. I remember that when I was in graduate school, I covered something called the Family Assistance Plan, which is commonly referred to as a negative income tax for welfare recipients. And the idea, which actually was put forth by Richard Nixon, and who could be a pretty conservative guy, and a liberal named Daniel Patrick Moynihan, basically said that instead of giving you food stamps and, you know, certain types of vouchers, they would just give you money based on the fact that, you know, whatever your income was, and there would be a negative income tax. You would actually get money, with the idea being that, you know, as a consumer, you know what your needs are. It's more efficient than those other types of things. So it failed miserably because conservatives stood against it, saying, oh, you know, all these poor people just buy the liquor and cigarettes and blah, 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 blah. But liberals also stood against it because they didn't want the social apparatus that they work with and that they had put together dismantled. And it certainly would have done some of that. And in the end, the people that suffered were the welfare recipients, and we never got anything accomplished. And the same thing's going on here with immigration. You know, if you're a conservative and you believe in tight border security and you believe in tight immigration laws, or if you're a liberal and you believe in a pathway to citizenship and a more compassionate view of immigration policy, you're both losing. Because we don't have a policy. Everybody's losing from this, and we need to come up with a policy. We need to sit down and talk, and we need to end the gridlock.
And you know what? If none of these guys do it, they shouldn't be voted back in. If right. You've seen your elected leader, I don't care how good they've been, if they are just going down party lines, and maybe the whole place needs to be rocked, and maybe they all need to go and put in some new people, because after 4 years of what they've done, you know, it's just ridiculous, and they've hurt the economy, they've hurt the American public, they've hurt anybody who wants to have a small business. It's just unbelievable. And you know, and I want to say this exactly, it's a subject I want to talk about, are these companies like Walgreens who are moving their corporations out of U.S. so that they don't have to pay all the benefits, or they get some kind of loophole, you know, they don't have to go by American law or what is it? Is it the employment standards if your corporation is not in the United States? Walgreens was a United States corporation, and they're leaving for corporate greed. And I think that's a terrible thing. That's unpatriotic. Americans have made that corporation what it is. And to take it out of the United States because you want more profit instead of staying in the United States where the people, the citizens made you a great corporation is to me wrong, and they should be punished.
Well, I agree with you, but we've got to do that, just like the voters. You know, it's funny. I got in an argument, and I asked this guy to call in our show, but he hasn't, and I gave him a card, and I asked him to call in the show. He got in an argument with me about term limits. He said, well, we all need term limits. You know, you need to get those guys out. And all that. I said, well, they have term limits. Every congressman has a 2-year term limit. Every senator has a 6-year term limit. The president has a 4-year term limit. If you don't like the job they're doing, don't reelect them.
Right.
But, you know, we want you to do the dirty work for us. We don't have the guts to stand up or the energy to look into what needs to be done and research and find out where these people stand and replace them. You know, democracy is not for sissies. It's for people that are engaged and committed.
Right. Yes.
So, we all have term limits. And if you don't like the job that any of us is doing, I'm an elected official. If you don't like the job I'm doing, replace me. find somebody that you think will do a better job and give them a shot. I really think that that's what we need to do. We need to be more engaged. And you're right. We can't just blame Congress. We can't just blame the president. We can't just blame the governor or the county councilman or the commissioner or the sheriff. We all have to take responsibility because that's the way democracy works.
That's right. And you know, I know we're going to be pretty close to closing, and I had to make this comment that on Tuesday is the Honorable Senator Michael D. Brown's birthday. Is it Tuesday or is it Wednesday?
Tuesday,
August the 5th.
Yes.
You are turning what? You're 30. 28.
Yeah. I'll be 61, and 61 is the new 59 and a half.
Exactly. It makes a huge difference.
Yes, it does. It makes a huge difference. I got to tell you, man, for all you people out there, I hit 40 and I said, that's no big deal. I hit 50 and I said, that's no big deal. But when you hit 60, it starts to become a big deal. You know,
it does.
You know, now I drive somewhere for an hour and it takes me 2 minutes to get out of the car because I have to listen to all the bones creak and everything snap and, you know, and I got to get my sea legs about me. So, I'm not looking forward to being older, but as they say, it beats the alternative. So when I come back next week on the air, I might be a little speaking a little slower.
A little crankier, because that's what happens to you, old guys. You get real cranky. Men get cranky. Let me tell you.
Yeah, I know. I'm out in traffic with them every day. When I used to ride my bicycle, those are the guys you look for. Women in minivans on their cell phones and old guys who don't want to pull over a couple of inches to keep from killing you. Or driving at 17 miles an hour when the speed limit's 40.
Exactly. So I want to wish you a very, very happy birthday. And I think, you know, I admire you for doing what you believe in when they don't freaking pay you a dime. I think that that's amazing. And people should realize all that what you do and all the ideas that you've come up with to put statehood out there and to get people thinking about it. I have to commend you because, you know, I don't have much admiration for the DC City Council. I see it as they're fearful of the power that you all might have, although it's two different powers. But, right. You know, that's the political thing where it's ego and it's, you know, who's who and who's what and who's perceived as being a threat. But you've done a great job. And I just want to commend you on it because, I've always said, and I'll say it out loud, that a lot of reason we think we've never really gotten that far or have a lot of money is because we've always stuck to our principles. And a lot of times that means you don't make the money and you don't get pushed ahead because you're not going to compromise who you are. And so in a way, I think we should wear that badge because, you know, we know a lot of people who went the other way, who took this or did that so they can get ahead. And you know what? When you do get elected for something else, Michael, you will be your own man. You will not be a political machine was not behind you. And I think that's probably the best place to be.
And I appreciate all your help, Kathleen, because you've always been there too. And you know, like I say, we both volunteer to do this show because it's an act of love on our part. We really have both been honored, I think, to serve, and we served some good people. We served Jimmy Carter together, and we served a lot of other good people. And so I appreciate your hard work too. And I hope you all will come back and join us next week. Follow us on Twitter at Senator Michael Brown, at SEN Michael Brown, or come and look for us on Shadow Politics. We'll see you next week, America. Thank you.
Feliz cumpleaños, Senator Michael Brown.
Thank you. Gracias.
I'm drinking a margarita for you. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.